I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver, British Columbia at thecommentary.ca. Lindy Mischewski joins me again. She's just published a new book, Walk, Eat, Repeat, Culinary Adventures on the Camino de Santiago. From the Pyrenees to the ancient city of Santiago de Compostela, we're taken alongside Lindy's arduous and adventurous hike through northern Spain. For a lot of people, it's a pilgrimage, sometimes rooted in faith. But for Lindy, it was a chance to get away from life, clear her thoughts, and adjust a change in her life. While undertaking this walk, seeing the sights and savoring the cuisine along the way. But the book is more than just Lindy walking and eating and repeating. As you go through this path, there's the walking element, which then and now can be viewed by some pilgrims as penance. By nightfall, you can stay at various lodgings along the way, from five-star hotels to hostels to everything in between. We see, as illustrated in the book, what the experience is like with friends or alone, surrounded by travelers from all over the world, all with various goals in mind. I'll ask Lindy about what it was like encountering various people, and of course, ask her about all manner of food she had along the way. It's a tasty journey, and there's a recipe after each chapter that sort of sums up the sort of specialities that Ms. Mischewski had. I'll also get her to reflect on the walk itself, as she's somebody who's hiked and climbed the Alps, Appalachians, and England's Lake District and Peak District. Lindy Mischewski is the author of four previous books on food and culture, two of which have won Taste Canada Gold Awards. She was previously on the program in 2015 when her book Sir John's Table, The Culinary Life and Times of Canada's First Prime Minister, was published. That book, along with this new one, is from Goose Lane Editions. We spoke 2 weeks ago with Lindy joining me from Kingston, Ontario. Please welcome back to the Plant Online program, Lindy Mischewski. Ms. Mischewski, good morning.
Morning.
Thanks for joining us. This is such a wonderful book because you take us on this remarkable journey. It's also a personal story, and of course, there's delicious food and wonderful recipes that we can make ourselves as we're reading the book. I guess to begin with, this is a journey that a lot of people take over, and we've read books about it or we've watched movies about it. For a lot of people, it's a spiritual journey. For you, what was happening in your life that you wanted to do this?
Oh, my goodness. So many things. I feel like I've kind of lost my way in life. I have been looking most of my career with academic journals at universities. And I felt like it was sort of a way to fill in time, but I didn't have that much meaning, going on in my career for myself. So I really wanted to write. And it seems like it's a pipe dream for so many people. And I'd written a couple of books, but I wanted to do something kind of much more personal. And I love walking. And I use it as a sort of starting mechanism to get my life sorted out. And I just thought I need an epic walk. I need an epic sort out of my life to figure out what I'm doing, where I'm going in this world, the remainder of my life. My kids were grown up, had just sort of, left, gone off to university and left home and are doing wonderfully well. But I felt like, okay, this whole chapter of my life is over and I need to figure out where I'm going next. So I think that I could think of nothing better than a very long walk to do that.
And it's a special walk because a lot of people, as I said a moment ago, take it, as a sort of spiritual journey. But as a walk itself, as a hike, it's quite a long one and scenic, obviously, and fun. And I guess you've done your research quite extensively as to how long it would take and what you would do along the way. At the end, looking back, I mean, as much research as you did, nothing could have really prepared you for it, could it?
It really couldn't have. And also, I'd never been to Spain. My family immigrated to Canada from England, and, I'd been in Europe several times, but I'd never been to Spain. And I was just this besotted with it. I was besotted with the food, the climate, the, you know, the countryside, the people. I just felt like Spain was one of the, you know, most fabulous places I've been. I think I got very lucky, of course, but I also think Spain does that with food. And there's some sort of magic on the Camino, and it, you know, it's hard to define what that is.
Yeah.
But it's clear there.
Yeah, and it seems that everyone gets what they need out of it, regardless of what that might be or what they even thought they needed, right?
That's so true, yeah. Yeah, I encountered all kinds of people who, you know, were just feeling sort of the same way as me. Like, it's a little bit of euphoria, and I think that the exercise all day long, too, you know, there's kind of, we know that there's exercise-related euphoria. I think that when you're walking for 5 or 6 weeks all day long, every single day, you know, that brain-foot-heart connection just really hammers home.
Yeah. Yeah, and as the book, as the title of the book says, you know, there are only really three things that you need to worry about in the course of your day, and that's to walk, eat, and sleep. And it takes us to I guess, our most primal or basic level, doesn't it, in terms of what we actually do in life every day.
Nailed it. And I think we walk less than we ever have as you know, human beings in general. And we don't, it's too time consuming for our modern lives to walk. It's a slow process. And I feel like to be able to take that time is such a gift. So, you know, I was gone for almost 6 weeks.
Uh-huh.
And that's a long trip. A lot of people can't do that. And I feel like there's this great, you know, there's this great build-up by the time you get to the end. And I, you know, I was lucky enough to be able to do it all in one fell swoop. And I just, yeah.
Yeah,
phenomenal experience. I wasn't going to write about it, you know, because I felt like everybody had written about it.
Uh-huh.
So I swore. I didn't even take notes because I swore I wasn't going to write about it.
but it's a hell of a book that's emerged because we feel like we've gone along with you, and our feet hurt even as we're reading the book. That's my experience of it. You mentioned that you took 6 weeks to do it all. There's a person along the way that you met, a character in the book named Sandra, who I believe she was she's from Europe. I think was it Germany that she's from. As you write about her, she because of I guess the proximity to Spain, she's able to do it. I guess she does a part of it for a couple weeks once a year. Is that right?
Yeah, and a lot of Europeans do that. Mm. They sort of drop in, you know, and they'll do their favorite sections, or they'll do the next section, or, you know, so they're sort of all over the map doing whatever they like, which is great, but we don't really have that opportunity when you live in Canada.
Yeah.
There's a limit to how many times one wants to fly.
And in her case, she, in terms of how her day was planned, it was planned pretty rigorously in terms of she would walk a certain amount, and then she would walk to, I guess, the next spot, and her accommodations were already booked. Is that right?
Yeah, she booked everything. But, yeah. You know, very German kind of, you know, she knew. You know,
and so how did you go about your own plan in terms of where you'd sleep that night, say? Did you have that all mapped out and booked in advance, or...?
Oh, absolutely not. I think probably it's advisable at the moment from what I hear, just because after the pandemic, yeah. Pilgrim traffic on the Camino really picked up again and it's very busy. But when I went, I went in October and November, and it was pretty quiet. You could easily find a place to stay.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, you know, pre-pandemic, so... again, you know, everything changed during, I think things just changed across the board in the pandemic, all around the world. And,
sure, yeah.
And I think that there's more rigorous rules in the refugios and albergues, the places where you stay now, and they want people booked in, they want to know what they're dealing with.
Yeah.
So You know, we'll see what happens in the years to come. But yeah, my trip was, I tried to leave it unplanned, which I'm very organized, and I usually make detailed notes and then execute whatever it is to the letter. But I somehow managed to let go of that and just, you know, find a place to stay every night and find a meal to eat and find a beautiful little village to sit in the sunshine and have a glass of wine. And,
Yeah, it's almost exciting as I was reading the book to find out, you know, how this would all turn out, if you'd find a good place for breakfast or a good place for dinner, because you obviously deserved a good meal at the end of the night. The other thing I was wondering about, Lindy, was along the way when you're looking for accommodations, because you stay in sometimes private rooms, sometimes in hostels where, you know, you're in this big, huge room with, you know, dozens of other people. Are there different kinds of accommodations along the way?
Oh my gosh, yeah, very, very varied. From, you know, sort of posh, rather elite, to expensive, but also to these small dormitories. Some of them, you know, just slightly terrifying because it's 160 people sleeping under the same ceiling or whatever, you know.
Yeah, I'll bet, yeah.
I don't know if it's that many, but maybe 100. And, you know, and the beds are choose by gel, and you don't know who's going to be next to you. And my experience was that everything worked. It just worked. The Spanish have it figured out. And I'm sure there were problems from time to time, but I was, you know, my own walk was pretty problem-free. The worst thing that I faced was a rickety, rickety old bunk bed that I was afraid, you didn't have any rails.
Yeah.
It was an upper bunk, and I was terrified. And somebody else said, look, I'm not worried about it. I'll sleep up there. You take mine. And I couldn't believe that they would do that. But there is this kind of generosity of spirit along the Camino that you get into in various different ways. Either you're the, you know, the benefactor, or sometimes, you know, you're the one saying, here, let me look after you.
Yeah.
And it's quite beautiful, really. It kind of restores your faith in humanity.
Yeah, I found it interesting that the different kinds of people that you met from other countries, obviously, friends that you made along the way. I was going to ask you about, you know, some of the more obnoxious people, but I mean, you see those people anywhere you travel, I guess, right?
It's true. And the Camino is a great way of sorting things out. You know, and I also think that at the end of a long day of walking, most everybody's pretty tired, and despite what their plans might be to be disruptive or partying or whatever it is they think they're going to do, nearly every Camino is dead quiet. Every albergue or refugio is dead quiet by about, you know, 10 o'clock at night. Everybody's sleeping because after you've walked all day, you do conk out.
How was it going around the country, especially because you mentioned a moment ago that you didn't speak Spanish, getting around with the lingo? I mean, if you needed something like a certain, your coffee done a certain way, or bread, or a certain food, were you able to find these things with a limited amount of Spanish, say?
I've never had a problem. And I had been doing Duolingo, you know, I couldn't claim to speak Spanish at the time, but I've been doing it ever since as well. So, I know quite a bit more now. But I think the Spanish are very hospitable, and they're really used to pilgrims. And they kind of want to make it work for you. So they go out of their way. In general, I feel like they go out of their way to be accommodating and to, if they don't understand you, to figure it out with you. And that's more just one of the many endearing things. I did not expect to fall so in love with the whole, the Camino itself, the Spanish people, the country. I don't know why I didn't. I didn't know what to think, you know, before I left, having not been to Spain. But having been, I would say, I mean, as a tourist, it's one of the safest, most beautiful countries you could go and travel in. So much of the mountains and coastline and great food, incredibly great food. and a long history of that, a long history of religion and, you know, so much there, really.
And in terms of, I know you went before the pandemic and everything's gone up in price everywhere, but in terms of how affordable it was then, I mean, 6 weeks, did you find that did it hit the pocketbook quite a bit, or?
You know, I don't remember specifically how much money I spent, but I know I came home with money. Like I couldn't spend. Like I couldn't even spend the money that I spent.
Yeah.
So it was very affordable. I mean, we get a main meal. We're on a different schedule than the Spanish schedule. Pilgrims are, just because, you know, generally you don't want to eat a big, huge meal in the middle of the day.
Yeah.
And then walk home afternoon.
Sure.
So we tended to be on kind of what I would consider a more North American schedule, where it was breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And, you know, they eat their main meal earlier in the day. But I found that, you know, you were always able to find what you needed. Always. Just always.
Yeah.
And that was remarkable to me, because I was trying to picture, you know, walking across Canada, for example. I don't think you're going to find everything you need every day. Like, just no way. I mean, you know, of course, the distances are even further in Canada, but it's pretty massive.
Yeah.
You walk clear across the country, right? So,
You mentioned you did this trip in October. In terms of the time of year, because there are days where we got quite hot even in October. Is that the best time of year if you want to say a little? I mean, I guess it's a lot cooler than if it were, say, in the middle of summer, right?
Absolutely. So I walked October into November. I was, I think I left maybe the 10th or 12th of September. I can't remember the date specifically anymore. And then walked, October.
Mm-hmm.
And then walked into November. And by November, it was getting pretty chilly. Like, it was getting pretty, you know, we weren't in walking in snow, even though we were in the mountains. But it was damp and cold. And, you know, you certainly felt it. But there were far fewer people, right? So it was kind of good in a way, because we had to find accommodations.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, and all of it's so reasonable, right? I'm sure it's gone up. I know everything's gone up globally.
Yeah.
I was flabbergasted by the quality that I was getting, the price that we were paying.
And the cuisine, obviously, I mean, this is what makes the book such a great draw, is that you describe so vividly the things that you eat along the way, even basic plain things that you'd encounter, say at a you know, for breakfast even. I guess they're made more delicious if you're hungry and tired, right? In terms of regional variations, because you do capture in your walk a great variety of places in Spain. That must have been interesting, seeing the different things that people eat in different places in Spain.
Fantastic. I found it so interesting. And I just found it so interesting that food is so kind of democratic in Spain. And it just struck me that food is so important to democracy. You know, we don't have the ability to eat and eat reasonably well is, in many countries, a huge privilege. And I mean, we're lucky to be in Canada, and I would have to say the Spanish do it even better. I mean, you know, the legacy of Spanish cooking is on in every meal. Like, it's just, you know, the history of the country, the spices they use, the kind of variety of, and like everything they grow, because they farms and agriculture everywhere you look. So, and they're small, right? They're small holdings.
Yeah.
But yeah, glorious food, just glorious food. And I couldn't.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't believe someone hadn't written a book about the food along the Camino, because it just seems like when I came home and thought about it, I mean, this is one of the things, like, you know, I said I wasn't going to write about it, and I didn't take notes, but I kind of was like, and when I got home, I thought, no, because no one's done the country credit by not writing about the food and how important it is. How important it is, like, for sustenance, for walkers, but I mean, also how brilliant it is.
Yeah, and at the end of each chapter, there's a recipe of something that you've just described that you've had there, and you've adapted it in a way that we here in Canada can make it ourselves. And that's the fascinating part. There are things there that I never thought I'd even try to make I could make and would probably be very delicious, even in my hands. How did you, in terms of the recipes, because even the way that you describe how to make them, I mean, I found that interesting to read. Was it difficult with every chapter to find something to say, put a recipe for?
It was kind of difficult to narrow it down because I had so many, and yeah. I didn't, you know, so I was thinking, well, I don't want to be because it really is kind of a metaphor and a story about, you know, food is so important that I just felt like I had to include it. And, you know, I it took a little bit of playing, so it took me a while to find good chorizo, and then I did, and then I was very happy. And there's a recipe, you know, if you want to try an easy recipe, there's one on page 90, chorizo al vino tinto, which is a fairly ubiquitous tapas dish.
Yeah.
And it's so easy, it's so straightforward, and it is ridiculously delicious. Like, just ridiculous. So good. So, you know, a glass of Spanish red. And the other thing that kind of, I don't think I talked about this in the book, but this is something that's quite surprising. Many drink a lot of wine, but I witnessed very, very little drunkenness ever.
Yeah.
Like, I think they drink the way they eat, with reverence.
Mm.
You know, so it's different relationship that they have with alcohol. It's very much more moderate, and they cook a lot with wine in the food, too. And I just found that very interesting, that the presence of wine, it's everywhere. Wine is everywhere. It seemed to be, like, consumed in such moderation. I thought that was quite impressive, actually.
Yeah, there's one place that you went where you thought that they might have watered it down because you'd had quite a lot, but you didn't really feel anything.
Yeah, that's true. And I think there were lower alcohol wines available there, and maybe I just didn't know the terminology, and that's what we were being told.
I see, yeah.
And it's a good thing, right? Like, you know, enjoyed it just as much at the time, and no negative repercussions for me. You bounce out of bed the next morning and get right back on the trail.
In terms of these recipes, though, you mentioned chorizo, manchego, which you talk about in the book. Products like that, do you find they're accessible in a place like Kingston? I'm sure I'd find these things here in Vancouver as well, right?
Oh, for sure you would in Vancouver, more so than in Kingston. And I really haven't had a problem finding any of the ingredients in Kingston, so I would have found it more troubling to write about if I couldn't find the ingredients.
I see, yeah.
But, I mean, they may not be quite as fantastic
as what you get in Spain, yeah.
I'm just really happy to have them available in Kingston.
Yeah. Would you do this again?
You know, I said I wouldn't. It's really interesting. I mean, I think there are all kinds of long walks. And I have to say, well, so my father was a very keen mountaineer and walked and climbed all over the world and got me going. There's three children in my family. Got us all hiking and climbing mountains. So my first mountain, which was just Mount Marcy in the Adirondacks, in New York State, but when I was five. So we did the Tour Mont Blanc in Europe.
Uh-huh.
And that pass spans and is more than the height of Everest along the route.
Oh, really?
I think it's about an 8 to 10 day walk. Maybe it's fewer for people. I don't quite remember. I went with my mother and father, and it was years ago. But that, that trail, that walk was one that set me on the path of loving long distance walks so much. Now I would like to find more long distance hiking trails and just, you know, do the ones that I can, the ones that are in reasonable proximity. And it's just, I feel like in terms of impacting your health and your brain, your mental health and your physical health, it's huge.
Yeah. I mean, that's clear as we read the book. And you mean you could use this book as a guide even. I mean, if there are just certain places that you want to go see again, I mean, you could do the European thing and just drop in to certain places, right?
Right, exactly.
Yeah. It's also a very personal book, and I found it very rewarding to read about. I don't know how much you want to tell people who are listening to us who haven't read the book yet about what you gained out of it personally, but... it was very satisfying at the end for you, wasn't it?
It was incredibly satisfying. Like, I wrote in the book when my husband and I had parted ways. And I obviously had all kinds of sorrow about that. But I didn't know how to fix it. I don't think either of us knew how to fix it. And I think this is often what happens. You know, in years together, we had one of our children was very, very sick for a long time. As an infant, and she was born in Australia, actually, and then had significant health issues. And I'm not saying that she's the reason that we weren't doing well, but there was a lot of stress in our relationship, and things have kind of gone up, you know, quite awry, although I know we both loved each other. And then when I came back from the Camino, I felt that I could, you know, I really wanted to try again, to do this over. And we bought a house together. I have to say, our relationship has never been better. And I say the Camino was responsible for that, because all that time I had by myself, walking, my feet pounding down the trail, you know, that I really believe that brain-foot-heart connection is so strong. And I thought about, where did I go wrong? Where did we go wrong? What can we do to mend this? I mean, it sounds corny to tell you this, but we've never had a better relationship. And, you know, this is going on 4 decades now. So
yeah.
It's quite powerful. Like, I would say the Camino is this incredibly powerful thing that anybody who's wrestling with anything in their life, I think, would be... the Camino would be helpful.
Yeah, that's a wonderful thing about the book is that, and I said this a moment ago, is that people get out of it what they need, even if they didn't think they needed something out of it. You know what I mean? There's some people that you read about in the book that go there because they're forced to by friends or family. And you know, you see them along the way, and they're rowdy or they're obnoxious. I'm sure they probably got something out of it useful, even though it doesn't seem like it at the time, you know?
I'm sure they did. I think you cannot actually do the Camino without getting something incredibly useful out of it.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad to have read this book because I've enjoyed it a great deal, and it's a marvelous story that you tell in the book. Congratulations on it and good luck with it. I so appreciate your time today, Lindy. It's been nice talking again.
Wonderful to talk to you, Joseph, and thank you for your time and your great questions. Appreciate it very, very much.
The book is called Walk, Eat, Repeat: Culinary Adventures on the Camino de Santiago. It's published by Goose Lane Editions. Its author, Lindy Mishevsky, joined me on the line from Kingston in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Planta.